took off my clip bow tie and attached it to her nipple, danced to Led Zeppelin on her lighted platform for a while, then instructed me to remove it without using my hands. She ground her breast into my face while the Marines guffawed. I walked away with my polka-dotted tie hanging from my mouth. Then, back to Apple Pie, which has got a fab British jukebox, filled with aggressively loose women, dressed in the slutty 50s get-ups so in vogue these days. A group called the Cherry People is playing, with a phenomenal guitarist called Punky Meadows. There's lovely Jenna Weifa, who said she'd been looking for me. "Men promise you everything and give you less," she says. Dupre and I drive her home, and we make out in the back seat. She's so exotic and so nice. Trey feminine. I slept over at Dupre's, and we watched A Night to Remember, and I started bawling when the father's reconciled with his son as the Titanic belches fire, and the band plays Rule Britannia. Holly's at work at the Board of Trade. Bar's at the Department of Transportation. Alice Wilcox comes over on her lunch break. She's interning at a law firm. I take her down to my studio. The radio was on and Reelin' in the Years was playing by previous Bard graduates, Steely Dan. "You've been telling me you're a genius since you were 17. In all the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean," sings Donald Fagen. We looked at my new paintings, a big one of the shadow that is pure pulp, drank a couple of screwdrivers, and finally had sex on the floor. A matinee, I believe it's called. She kept her boots on. I have to say, I can't really connect with that girl, as sexy as she is. We're like ships passing in the night. Her personality seems a put-on. There's no there there, as Gertrude Stein said. She went back to work. So did I. Dupre turns up at the front door, wants to know if I can come out and play. We hit the bookstores of Pennsylvania Avenue, looking at Ungerer, Gory, remaindered erotic art tomes, etc. We entered a pet store that seemed lost in time. No proprietor visible. First room, innocent enough, birds. But the shop continued down long corridors, getting darker and darker. We came upon a six-month-old chimp, name of Hannibal, very unhappy, bashing his head against the bars. The chimp extended his hand for me to shake, I swear, and I took it in mine. His hand felt like pliable black plastic. He stared at me, sizing me up. I think he decided against me, 'cause he started throwing a bunch of crap at me. Wood chips, scrapings, smelly stuff. Was this Twilight Zone shop, in fact, run by funny animals? At any given turn, I expected a huge black arm to hook me and drag me off. Rendezvous with Jenna Weifa at Pier 9. She looked ravishing in her deco clothes, brown crocodile shoes, her hair piled up over her long neck, her incongruously large breasts harnessed in a lace brassiere. She wants to get a breast reduction, which is a good idea. We danced amongst the high fashion types, the pretty boys, the snazzy girls, the lesbians, the gawkers. Slow dances were best. She's got funny mannerisms, coquettish. Says she's addicted to happiness, but ultimately, she seems sad. I should send her a dozen roses. I don't. Meanwhile, I watch a new documentary, An American Family, featuring Lance Loud on PBS, and it's really good. Smoke some hash and have a solitary wander through Dumbarton Oaks to think my own thoughts. Drifting down a path, see a giraffe's head peeking above the treetops. Good hash. But no, I've arrived at the zoo. Chimp picking up a peanut with his toes in the house of smelly monkeys. Great apes smoking cigars like gang lords. Black lemurs in conversation with timid spider monkey. Two pandas sit politely next to each other, eating carrots out of their dainty fists. Dupre takes me to one of his favorite haunts, the Admiral Benbow Inn. He says it reminds him of his favorite book, Auto da Fé by Canetti. Dark red lacquer gay dive with six pointed silver stars on the midnight blue ceiling. A florid old English queen sits next to me, buys us drinks, and says he gives the best blowjobs in town. Does a few funny Spike Milligan routines. Dupre tells him to go sit on an egg. "Now don't you go puckering up your lips for another stinger," he says, and orders another round. Another night, I get my sister and her husband high for their first time ever on hash. My pernicious influence. We go hear Les McCann at the cellar door, and he plays his crossover hit, Compared to What? The Washington Monument isn't really a phallic symbol, because it took them 4 years to get it up. Farewell, Washington, D.C. Sputnik. January 29th, 1973. Back at Bard for my last semester before I transferred to Parsons School of Design in Greenwich Village. Dupre flunked out. Now he's working in the kitchen and staying with his girlfriend, Cheryl. A list of my new records. The Academy in Peril, John Cale. Field to Kilimanjaro, Miles Davis. Nefertiti, Miles Davis. Earthspan, Incredible String Band. Aladdin Sane, David Bowie. For Your Pleasure, Roxy Music. Raw Power, Stooges. Urban Spaceman, Bonzo Dog Band. Led Zeppelin 5. I want to be a movie actor so I can get my screen life mixed up with my real life and can't even remember who Duncan Hanna is anymore. Somebody's nuts. Is it me? When I was about 12, I wrote J. Edgar Hoover a letter explaining that I wanted to be a G-man. He wrote a personal letter back, told me what a fine young lad I was, signed with a big flourish from his fountain pen. I've had a change of heart since then. All the love letters I get sound like T-Rex songs. NYC with Eric Lee, math wizard, the Ching Chong Chinaman, his words. We get loaded and go see Free in Traffic at the Academy of Music. Walk through the lights of the city. Bought some English imports, Bowie tickets, corned beef sandwiches. We eat street hot dogs for 35 cents, and they pop when you bite into them. They're made out of rat noses or something. Down to the Mercer Arts Center for a Valentine's Day party featuring the New York Dolls. Also featured are Wayne County, Eric Emerson, and Suicide. It's like watching the birth of a wildly frantic and perverse new subculture, bordering on mass transvestism. Where do all these kids come from with their teased hair, their gold lame, their plastic charm bracelets, their dyed rabbit's feet, their cap pistols and studded holsters? "Trash, pick it up," sings David Joe. At 5:30 a.m., we went to the after party in Jungle Red Hair Salon, filled with painted ladies of both sexes, platinum blondes with black roots, and everybody preened in the endless mirrors. Staying in Eric's dorm at Columbia, I salute Athena and her corroded brass throne on the steps of the library. Down into the graffitied subways, where a sad soul recently committed suicide. Eating cashews on the way to the Whitney Biennial. My mind conducts a process of elimination, discriminating between what's good and bad. Then we pay $5 for a 90-minute hard-on, induced by the much-lauded deep throat. Reading list. Our Lady of the Flowers, Jean Genet. A Man and a Maid, anonymous. Morris, E.M. Forster. My Life and Loves, Frank Harris. Wuthering Heights, Emily Bronte. Bonjour Tristesse, François Sagan. File Bodies, Evelyn Waugh. Pan, Newt Hampson. Black and White, A Portrait of Aubrey Beardsley, Bridget Brophy. Lady Chatterley's Lover, D.H. Lawrence. I received a letter from my mom today. A pair of pink silk panties fell out of the envelope. Mom writes, "Speaking of deep throat, I found the enclosed item under your bed. Perhaps you can return it to its rightful owner, poor thing, whoever she is." Does she say poor thing because the owner is going around without any underwear, or because she had the misfortune to meet me? My painting teacher, Murray Reich, a color field painter, studies my new Diebenkorn-influenced painting. He talks about Matisse's affinity for the color blue. "You have a natural handling for paint and terrific taste," he tells me in confidence. "Except, I'm drawn to the Pre-Raphaelites, like Millais, Jerome, Burne-Jones. That's bad," he says. I feel lazy when I think how good Sheila was at my age. Then, I think how much better I am than most of my contemporaries. It's all relative. I feel the pull both ways, a set of contradictions. I scored 590 on my English SAT test, 550 in math. That's not so hot. Movie list. Moore, 1968. Joy House. Shadow of the Thin Man. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. The Assassination of Trotsky. The Garden of the Finzi-Contini. Chloe in the Afternoon. McCabe and Mrs. Miller. This Man Must Die. A Fistful of Dollars. Breathless, again. Such a Gorgeous Kid Like Me. The Day of the Jackal. Spring Break in Minneapolis. Leave a party on Girard to go to Sutton's, the friendly gay bar where a guy like me won't get beat up, with irritable Lainey and cute Claire, who has pink, green, silver, and black curly hair. We found $110 in crisp bills in the parking lot. The girls are shrieking with delight. We dance and drink and go home, and Lainey's determined not to succumb to my advances and is affecting anger at me. But it doesn't take much to change that. After the lights go out, the fun begins. She begins to smolder. She's as lovely and passionate as ever. In fact, insatiable. Back at Bard, I'm sitting in the dining commons, and a dopey freshman comes up to the table crying. "What's the matter?" I say. "Picasso's dead," she blubs. "Finally," I say. "How can you say that?" she cries. "Look, he hasn't made a good painting in decades. It's all been schlock. He believed in his own genius too much, didn't edit himself, just pure self-indulgence. What happened to him? Did he choke in his own ego?" "Fuck you," she said, and wandered off to find some sympathetic mourners who fall for Pablo's hype, hook, line, and sinker. I'm flunking medieval art class. I thought it was going to be knights and stuff, but it's about buttresses and boring tapestries. Not my bag. I find it almost impossible to learn things I'm not interested in. But today, I painted for 12 hours, my mouth watering the whole time. It's a continuous struggle to incorporate good drawing with good painting. The Hurricane Boys come to visit me at school. We drink beer by the waterfall. Down to the city in an old Rambler, where we go to the top of the Empire State Building. We walk along 14th Street past nail salons, Soul Brothers, multicolor Afro Frightwig shops. Then, Kenny's Castaways with petulant Christian Hoffman, who's Lance Loud's best friend from Santa Barbara. The Dolls are playing loud and sloppy. The Hurricane Boys got thrown out for being rowdy, so we got a cab up to Columbia to crash at Eric Lee's. We had a bottle of Duncan's Scotch, the cheapest there is. Delivers the hangover before the high. Derangement set in. Moderation evaluation by my art teachers, Matt Phillips, Murray Reich, Jim Sullivan, Jake Grossberg, whereby they assess my progress at the halfway point of my BARD education. I laid out 6 canvases, some drawings, 25 slides. They said I had great vitality, a great sense of design and composition. Jake said that I am and will be an artist, and occasionally make very beautiful paintings. My hand is consistent. My work meanders through style and quality. I don't do follow-ups. They say, by painting a de Kooning-esque nude and then a television set, I cancel myself out. I replied that I was curious, open-minded, and only 20 years old. We all start out by aping somebody. They said, yes, but it looks like you see something you like and then say, I wonder if I could do that. And then you do, to prove to yourself and others that you can. It's a waste of energy. But I'm trying to pull all my interests together. Phillips said, puffing at his pipe, that I have a crappy high school hangover with a tendency towards illustration. Dirty word around here. He said I needed a worldview, a stance towards the universe. Do you think that anything you do is good, huh? I had asked them what I would do upon graduation, and they said, bartend, drive a cab, construction, all that for my $24,000 education. Why don't I just work as an illustrator? Because if you do, you will never be a fine artist, they answered. What about Homer, Hopper, Warhol? They were all illustrators. They shook their heads in woe. You have the capability to be a good third-generation abstract expressionist. Don't fuck it up. I don't think that's me. They're mad because I'm leaving. I want to learn to paint like Manet, if only to reject it later on. If I move into abstraction, I want it to be through the gateway of representation. Masturbation on campus. Last year, Lloyd Bosca and I quietly crawled up a fire escape to peek at mysterious oddball W.S., a nerdy giant who would return to his room after dinner every night, lie in his bed, start playing solitaire, then get out a pot of Vaseline and his enormous schlong and begin masturbating, all the while playing cards. I swear to God, very Diane Arbus. Then there's D.G., who Dupre discovered in downstairs men's room in the library, masturbating to his reflection in the mirror with a plastic bag over his head. I was failing anthropology, but was told I could get a C if I wrote a paper, which I put off until the night before it was due. So, with the help of a bottle of Pernod, I wrote an extemporaneous paper called The Masturbatory Cycles of Monkeys, fully illustrated with drawings of the onanist monkey's expressions at the moment of orgasm. The teacher wrote at the bottom, "Very funny, Mr. Hanna." In fact, I was failing everything, but Nixon pulled an aggressive move in Vietnam, and the anti-war movement amped up. We were told if our demonstration activities conflicted with our studies, we could write a note to the dean saying so, and we'd be given a C for all our courses, which I did. Lucky break for me. One night I was sitting in Adolph's bar at 2 a.m. with Cy Davies, a junkie whose dad is a famous Washington, D.C. newscaster. I'm dressed up as a biker. My new motorcycle jacket, a greasy quiff, jeans, biker boots, maybe a little rouge. We were quite well oiled, talking about the Boston Strangler, when who should stomp in but 3 members of the Kingston chapter of the Hells Angels. Uh-oh, I thought. Wrong time to be dressed as a biker. They surveyed the place, then their eyes landed on me. Look what we got here. This cat looks like a faggot. Another said, "Yeah, he do look like a faggot." With that, they hoisted me up and punched me in the face. Davy said, "Who the fuck are you?" The biker dropped me back into my chair and directed his attention to scrawny old Davies. "Oh, so you the tough guy," said the biker with a smile. "Yeah, maybe I am," he said foolishly. "Meet me outside then," said the head biker. Davies follows him out through the side door and finds a .45 caliber automatic aimed at his forehead. "Still tough?" says the biker. "No, sir," says Davies, white as a sheet. He turns and goes back in, hides behind the bar with Adolf, who's calling the police. The bikers took off with a roar of Harleys. May 1st, 1973. Down to the city with Dupre to see King Crimson at the Academy of Music on 14th Street. Many of their fans are stumbling around on Quaaludes. The band was lit by blinding silver light, like the Blitz, expertly executing their colossal science fiction psychodrama like a pack of deadly lab technicians. I gripped the arms of my seat in terror. There's a freshman dance major named Jordan, very pretty, very clean, like a Swiss miss, big gray Madonna eyes. She has a half-moon smile, crooked teeth, lustrous light brown hair. She wears a delicate gold cross around her neck. All the lesbians are crazy about her. At closing time at Adolf's one night, we're all about to leave. "I like you, you know," I say to her casually. "Yes, I know," she says. "Are you still going out with Crystal?" I ask. "Not anymore," she says, smiling. "Then why don't you come home with me?" I ask. "Okay, I will." She's got an old green Triumph convertible with Jesus on the dash. Smells like old leather. Drives us back to my little room. Candles. Undress. Urgent mouth. A lithe dancer's body. The curve of her stomach, all toned and smooth. Beautiful breasts. With areolas that were the same color as her unpainted lips. Is this falling in love? We press close and look each other in the eyes. We get horizontal, a nudging cunnilingus. She tastes like the sea. She clasps my heart on. She says, "Don't come in me." "I won't." The gush from the cap of my cock arches over her taut torso to her breasts, filling up her belly button with liquid life. We're sticky and happy, listening to the girl from Ipanema, entranced with our delicious secret. So begins a new liaison, forged in lust, absorbed with each other's bodies and minds. She has a bottle of Quaaludes, which only make me fall downstairs, but then I'm always drunk. I take nude pictures of her underneath the posters of Jesus she's got on her wall in her sunny room in Manor House. I don't understand the Jesus thing. It's a first for me, but her faith doesn't seem to inhibit her carnality one bit. She dreams of Nijinsky. We hunt for a cat under the covers, only find each other. I did some ink drawings of her pretty vagina, very carefully, really looking hard. She's very acquiescent. Goodbye, Bard College. You were good to me. I learned a lot in a roundabout way. Atomic Eel. Minneapolis, summer, 1973. Early June. It's been raining for 2 weeks. Everything very green. I'm going to summer school at the U of M to make up 8 credits. Astronomy and sociology. Because Parsons is just an art school, and my parents insist that I get a BFA. These 2 courses were conceived for stupid football players, I was told. Snap courses that anyone could pass. They sure are boring. I doodle during class and never read my textbooks. My dad drives me there in the morning in his LeBaron convertible. Wayward Lass Laney has got hair that smells like a haystack. She looks like she may not be playing with an entirely full deck. Her femme fatale contours shifting under a thin dress. She's wearing a duck dress. You can see upper quack. Her wobbly eyes and a faraway gaze. She's listening to Eddie Cochran's Something Else. She's got a scab on her elbow from roller skating down Hennepin Avenue. Always the center of attention. She decides on a bath, so I sit in the pot to watch her naked 18-year-old self wash her hair. I smoke a Gauloise. Splish, splash. I think of Bonnard. I think of Piccoli watching Bardot in contempt. She's laughing and being her dizzy self. We go out dancing, where she causes a scene, spills her drinks, gets in fights, plays aloof, flirts, apologizes. Later in bed, we iron out all the disharmony with gentle lovemaking, while a rainstorm rages outside. I knot her dirty brown curlies between my knuckles, squeeze her hand as she lets go. Everything is said in the bed. Jimmy and I go see The Conformist, which blows our minds. Dominique Sanda pulling down her leotard and saying, "Embrace me." Jean-Louis Trintignant is so good. It's been 30 years since World War II. Summer films. Last Tango in Paris. The Conspirators, Hedy Lamarr. A Place for Lovers, Dunaway and Mastroianni. Arsène Lupin. Last Year at Marienbad. Night and the City. Stolen Kisses. Dillinger, Michelle Phillips. Belle de Jour. The Macintosh Man, Sanda. Murmur of the Heart, The Return of the Thin Man. When Dad gets home from work, I say, "How's everything in the salt mines?" He says, "Thanks for remembering, son." He puts on some classical music, then changes the record. "I hate Sopranos," he says, sipping at his martini. He tells me that for every $50 he gives me, he's got to earn $120, taxes. We watched Goodbye, Mr. Chips with Peter O'Toole and Petula Clark, and he got sad. "Is it because it's about the new replacing the old?" I ask. He looked across the room at me, dressed in my sailor suit, and his eyes got like a basset hound's, and he said, "Yes." He told me I don't meet the requirements of leading a happy, successful life. "You've resisted instruction as early as you could talk." He's appalled that I don't wear underwear. He says I'm too critical and cynical. He's afraid I'm stoic. Mom's drunk and tries to summarize, as if I weren't in the room. Ends by saying, "In spite of the fact that you're a whole lot of trouble, we still love you." I feel queasy. New records. On the Boards, Taste. About Us, Stories. Earthbound, King Crimson. Last Tango in Paris. Gatto Barbieri. New York Dolls. Vintage Violence, John Cale. Pygmy, Keith Christmas. Mott, Mott the Hoople. Summer Reading. Poems, Cavafy. Breakfast at Tiffany's, Truman Capote. The Day of the Jackal, Frederick Forsyth. Justine, Lawrence Durrell. La Maison des Rendezvous, Alain Robbe-Grillet. Claudine, Colette. Brighton Rock, Graham Greene. The Story of Venus and Tannhauser, Aubrey Beardsley. Ashenden, Somerset Maugham. Parties, Carl van Vechten. Hunger, Newt Hampson. The Big Knockover, Dashiell Hammett. All our gang are concerned about the extent of our drinking. We all talk about how we are not alcoholics, but it is so addictive. It's everywhere. Aren't we too young? I hope I'm not an egomaniac. I dislike egomaniacs. Marlon Brando broke a photographer's jaw 2 days ago. There's 3 billion people in the world right now, more than all the other humans since time began. The world's doubled since I was born. Not good. Got my grades from Bard. Honors in painting, pass in drawing, B minus in Victorian literature, C minus in medieval art. Sherlock Holmes said your mind is like a living room. You furnish it to your own specific needs, but most people just put in any old lumber in there. June 20th. Kramer's new flophouse. 3 sneaky-looking Siamese cats in the front yard. Broken-down porch and back. He's got a cute girlfriend called Pauline. It's like she's on Spanish Fly all the time, pulling me into a bathroom during a party for a wet kiss and a feel. She's from the wrong side of the tracks. I've read books about girls like her, with titles like Teenage Tramp. To be young and in Minneapolis in 1973, down at Sutton's, they're using amyl nitrate inhalers, poppers, which makes your heart explode. Lainey is the obnoxious belle of the ball. "Hey, punk," I say in greeting. "Oh, baby," she replies. She blinks dumbly, offers me her tongue. Back at her apartment, she sat naked at her dressing table, lit a cigarette, looking so young and pretty. Her smudged face, her slender arms raised to do up her flaxen hair. She laughed, wrinkling her nose, a marvelous creature caught in the embryonic stage of her development. Filled with flights of fancy, believing in the absurd, I approached her and gently rubbed her shallow ribs, her white flanks. She tapped with her bare feet on the carpet. We are students of love, entangled with possessiveness, feeding on jealousy and lust. Oh, the messy debris of our lives. We're all in the process of unraveling. It's too good to waste, as Joni Mitchell says. June 31st. At the country club, lying in a chaise longue by the aquamarine kidney-shaped pool, the umbrellas are a faded blue. They blow over in electrical storms. Watching the 17-year-old girls walk by in their shocking pink bikinis. I launched a mechanical submarine in this pool when I was a kid. Gone now. The girls walk by again, brushing against my old blue white stag jacket, then park themselves behind me. Wet explosion of a lean muscle man springing off the high dive, doing a can opener, splashing up a spray of chlorine, and sending the inner tubes adrift. A blonde in a yellow bikini, the cups held together with a large white ring, is doing the frog stroke, smiles at me with white teeth, glistening in the sunlight. When she climbs the ladder to get out, I spy, through my sunglasses, the yellow triangle from which a tuft of damp hairs protrude. Poolside voyeurism. Brother Louie is on the radio. Great summer song. July 4th. Smoke pot with Jimmy in the country club bathhouse at 9 p.m., getting ready for fireworks. Smells of wet towels. The pool is lit up in the dark, eerie turquoise glow, so we dive in. Feels very sensual. Jenny Brown is there, tripping on acid with her posse. Kramer is dressed as a firecracker. Black tights, red glitter, red hair, a huge silver wick coming out of the top of his head. Not afraid of making a fool of himself. He terrorizes the little girls, who then decide he is just a harmless madman. They start laughing and hitting him. The fireworks explode over the fairway of the golf course. Big champagne bursts that sizzle down the night sky. Pale comets gliding up. Glittery gold wafting down. Oh, yeah. Jordan came to visit on her way back east after a dance summer school in Colorado. Despite her niceness and beauty, I wasn't into it, poor thing. All she wanted was a sweet, sexy summer romance. My drunkenness was a problem. I hit the garage with my dad's car one night pulling in. She snuck into my room in her sheer nightie after we'd all gone to bed, wanting more physicality, and I sent her back upstairs. Cruel. I drove her to the airport. She was in tears. I was a cad. More cruelty. My old high school chum Lori drives me to school some days, as she's going to summer school as well. I smoke her cigarettes and play with the car radio as she prattles on about how sophisticated she's become. And do I think we'll have an affair? I sure hope not. And tells me about masturbating with a Coke bottle in front of her boyfriend on a camping trip. And did I think that was perverse? I just stared out the window and said, I don't know. Led Zeppelin at the St. Paul Civic Center. I was hopped up on Pernod and amphetamines. Mashed in the crowd of 18,000 while the band unleashed their powerful dark magic. The lighting was like Ready Steady Go. Jimmy Page was amazing, so psychedelic. We were put into a collective erotic spell. A sweet little rock and roller of 16 came wordlessly into my arms, such as the power of Page's witchcraft, grinding her crotch against my hips. And she was busty and suntanned and wore silver eyeshadow and kissed me with abandon. They played for 3 hours. This was no ordinary rock show. This was alchemy. We left, bathed in sweat. In May, 56,800 kids showed up for Led Zepp in Tampa, largest audience for a single act ever. Half the world is under the age of 15. Rock and roll lust continued. The Hurricane Boys are hired to play at some experimental hippie farm. 300 freaks. I'm souped up on white crosses. There are 20 kegs of beer. There's high school crush Rachel scampering through the fields. There's cute little Black Betty, once an innocent in a velvet cape, now super teenage ruin, rumored to be a sadomasochist and suffering heroin shakes. The band shows up with another drummer. Tells me I've been replaced. Traitors! These were my best friends. Cowards! I'm bummed out. Electric guitars are raging. Beautiful Jenny Brown comes over with an inch of bourbon for me. She says she feels sorry for me. Says in her husky voice, "Don't worry about it. Those guys are just a bunch of assholes." Then she leans in and starts kissing me. God, I go for you just like the rest of your fans. The two of us look like brother and sister. Amidst all the chaos and screaming, we stole off to the 6-foot-tall bulrushes, lie down in the trampled reeds, which created our own small enclosure. The full moon had risen, which created a blue glow. We doffed our garments, white cotton, her, black leather, me. Her body was brown, except for the pale tan line around her breasts and divine pubis, where a bathing suit had been. She stood over me and I looked up at her flat, muscular stomach. Euphoria. We lay tasting and caressing for an hour in our own private domain. You never know what the day will bring. Jenny called up a couple of days later and says she likes me now that I'm not a Hurricane Boy, now that I'm out of that mess, as she put it. She tells me about her rabbits, Curly and Rags. She wants to make it clear that she is not picking me up, says she's not like all the other dumb girls who chase me. She's the original mixed-up kid. But she does seem to have the power to draw me out of my body and into her own. We meet at the Lake Harriet Bandshell. I look at her tomboy getup, her high cheekbones, her deliciously sculpted nose, her strong chin, her long brown shag. She holds me from behind, kisses my neck, whispering that we are incompatible. "Are you always suave, or are you ever just normal?" she says accusingly. I remember her from the private girls' school, where she wore a navy blue uniform. She told me she didn't want to fuck me, then took me home and did just that, on the kitchen floor, right next to the refrigerator. When she removed her undies, she said she had enough hair in her vagina for 3 girls. We were quiet so as not to wake her sleeping parents. Such a beautiful look on her face, smiling with her eyes closed. After another bourbon, we slipped down to the dark basement for a second bout on a green exercise mat on the floor. We meet at Al's bar on Excelsior Boulevard on a sunny afternoon. She's a regular. She's hunched over a glass of bourbon. She asks if I'm tricking her. No. Well, the tricks you pull are the same ones I pull, she says, lighting a cigarette. Nothing is simple with her. Distrustful Jenny. I love this bit of Shakespeare. This sceptered isle, this earth of majesty, this other Eden, this happy breed of men, this little world, this precious stone set in a silver sea, this blessed plot, this earth, this realm, this England, this nurse, this teeming womb of royal kings, feared by their breed and famous by their birth. My parents are away. American Bar Association, convention in Washington. I'm feeling sad and romantic listening to the deeply melancholic Last Tango soundtrack while drinking a brandy and ginger. Getting myself into a right state. Romantic agony building up. I wonder if I have emphysema. I wonder if my crabs are gone. I wonder if Jenny really loves me. Her barred boyfriend is shooting heroin because he misses her. I wonder if I can paint well, write well. I wonder how much I can see. I wonder if I can ever give myself completely to another. I wonder when the New York Dolls album is coming out. I wonder what I'll be like in 5 years. I wonder if things are getting better or worse. I wonder what Brian Ferry's doing right now. I wonder if I see myself at all objectively. I wonder if this is corny. I wonder if I should make myself another drink. I wonder if I will flunk my astronomy test. I did. One evening, Kurt was over. We were sitting in the backyard drinking cocktails and smoking. "Hey, I got an idea. Let's put your mom's clothes on," says Kurt. So we went into her closet and both picked out dresses, mine with big polka dots. We smeared on some lipstick and went back outside with a couple of fresh cocktails, laughing all the way. We both have long hair, but we still made a couple of homely-looking women. Big yucks, no big deal. But a few days after my parents got home, my mom came into my room with a troubled look in her face. "What's the matter now?" I asked. "I thought I told you that no friends were to come over." "Yeah," I lied, "and no one did." "Well, someone did. Someone strange," she said. "What are you talking about?" I said, at a loss to figure out whatever evidence I had failed to conceal. "Someone's been wearing my clothes. I had 2 dresses, fresh from the dry cleaners, and now they smell of body odor. Plus my cosmetics are all a jumble. What kind of weird girl did you have here?" she said, truly upset. "Oh, that, that was me. I wore 'em." Her face clouded. "You? But why?" "I was bored and I thought it would be funny. It was. You should have seen me," I joked. Long silence. Then, "Duncan, that's weird." "No, it's not. It's not like it turned me on or anything. It was hilarious." She asked what I did for footwear, and I told her I kept my sweat socks on. That made her laugh. Whew. Close call. Jenny comes over, and we exchange love vows. She reminds me of Eloise of the Plaza, except that Jenny has more deviant games. One day, after my morning class at the U, I took the bus to her parents' house on Humboldt. I climbed 3 flights of white-carpeted stairs with the framed lithographs on the wall into Jenny's private wing, where she's sleeping on her stomach, her broad back exposed. I stoop and smell her, feeling a little fragile and out of place. She slowly wakes and grumbles sleepily, "Why can't I have you?" I roll her over and say, "You can." She says, "No, I mean all of you. Why can't I have all of you?" I climb in with her, and afterwards she says, "I love having boys come in me." Boys, plural. She dumbfounds me. She says she's used to being the queen bee. Later that night, we go see Song of the Thin Man. Nora is mixing drinks, and Asta's prancing around merrily. Jenny leans over and whispers in my ear, "Mister, you can fuck me any time you want to." Wow, what a gal. No one can say fuck with quite the same resonance she can. Minnesota is on the cover of Time magazine, which I grew up with. Says it's the best place to live in the U.S. I can't wait to leave. 2 summers ago, I was in Naples, standing on street corners looking up narrow alleyways that climbed the hill precipitously, pennants of washing crisscrossing the way. I stood on the shore looking at the burnished sea, Capri faintly outlined against the horizon. I wandered idly with the eye of an innocent, sort of. Seems like ages ago. Whatever happened was absolute. Dive. August 12, 1973. Minneapolis. Hello, fresh, clean pages. My affair with Jenny continues. She jumped up and down when she saw me today. I drank the love potion number 9. We're sitting on the front steps of her parents' house, waiting for Clifford. He comes loping down the street. "Here comes Jim and Jim's cock," says Jenny, for indeed Jimmy is very well endowed. She's got a burn on her inner thigh from the gas tank of someone's motorcycle. She uses my satin jacket to wipe up some beer. Jenny sings "Wouldn't It Be Loverly." She likes Eliza Doolittle. "Mind how you go, love. Air, do you know what I did last night? I feel half insane." She looks like French actress Zuzu, which of course fits right in with my Parisian cinema fantasy. We go to Ragstock, where he can buy a bag of clothes for $10. We try on zoot suits, kimonos, sinister leather Gestapo coats with a collar turned up, Eisenhower jackets, whack uniforms, negligees. We take pictures of each other. One minute, she's Maid Marian, then an intergalactic space queen. She wears those panties with the days of the week on them. My baby loves the hanky-panky. Once, when she was very drunk, which always makes her look like an innocent young girl, she said, "Oh, look, I'm wearing a brassiere for a change. See? Feel it." She asks me to put my hands on her breasts. She's proud of them, and rightly so. They have a lot of character. She warns me that she's insane. Says she's been diagnosed as a schizophrenic, runs in the family. Says we're not right for each other. Wait and see. I'll get my just desserts. Then I'll be sorry. She throws her cigarettes all over the ground, like a brat. I tell her I'll take care of her. "No, you won't," she says vehemently. She tells me to save my breath, because she doesn't have the slightest idea what I'm on about. She has many guises, boy, girl, man, woman. I see her scared, nervous, and vulnerable, then strong and cruel. She breaks down crying, her beautiful face streaked with tears. She's the dominant one in this relationship. I've made very few decisions. They were all made for me. She's in Chicago now with her unfaithful boyfriend. I'm just her backstreet boy. It's driving me batty. I'm out of my depths. I'm getting my comeuppance. A party at Kramer's apartment led to the roof. Our old friend, Tommy Haskell, drank a lethal concoction of liquor, then passed out. We left to go play pool at Lyle's. When Tommy awoke, he stumbled off the roof to the concrete alleyway below, breaking both his wrists and ankles, puncturing his lung, internal bleeding, etc. When we returned, there were cop cars with their cherry lights flashing. It was terrifying. He'd been taken to intensive care. He's one of those guys who should never, ever drink. His life is in a nosedive. In the morning, I'm on the phone, checking on his condition. Dad comes over and hands me a Bloody Mary. I've got my summer school final exams in a week, completely unprepared. My mother and I talk art. She says my paintings look lightweight to her. She's right. It's because I skipped the basics and moved right into the deviant painters. I bought a Hockney poster for my wall, an etching with an Egyptian theme. I like the way the English interpret other cultures. Roxy Music's take on the American dream. Hockney's take on L.A. Fleetwood Mac's take on Chicago blues. In the car on the way to school, Dad tells me he was a virgin when he married Mom. Good girls didn't do it. He was being shipped out to war and didn't want to die a virgin. But our marriage was a success. It might have been different if we'd played around beforehand. Your screening process is a bit more thorough than it was in my day. He said Jenny's been the only girl I brought home with something to say. She's quite outspoken, isn't she? He concludes. August 21st, 1973. My 21st birthday. Am I supposed to quit goofing around now? Ha! Fee! I have to shave almost every day now. My parents gave me $200 for my present. Jenny gave me her present in her bedroom, which is cluttered with cages full of birds and rodents. Posters on the wall by Gauguin and Matisse. Photos of the Hurricane Boys, Humble Pie, and me. We make love and lie quiet. Jenny, louder and softer. She puts a small white rabbit with hairy paws and black eyes in my hairless chest. We drink bourbon and gingers and listen to Terry Reid. She begins to cry because she's not great at anything, but thinks that I will become a famous artist, that her on-again, off-again love only makes me sad. But she cheers up, and we go to Dinky Town for Japanese noodle soup and across the street to the art house to see Without Apparent Motive, with Trontignon and Dominique, more going on here than meets the eye, Sanda. Went to see Belle de Jour at the Grand Illusion Theater on Cedar Avenue with Eric Lee. As soon as Pierre Clementi hit the screen, we were galvanized. Pale face, coarse black hair, steely eyes, gold teeth, big lips. Dressed in a wrinkled black velvet suit, rumpled beige silk shirt, with collar bent funny, gangster tie, a large studded black leather belt, lavender socks, hole and toe, black patent leather buckle boots, black leather SS maxi trench coat, and finally a sword cane, plus a huge gleaming automatic. Wow! Every inch the killer. 7 stitches on his back. A souvenir, he explains to Deneuve. We remembered him from The Conformist, the chauffeur. But this was something else. Our new hero. I must paint him. I found out he's currently in an Italian prison because the secret police planted drugs on him. Sartre, Fellini, Genet, Godard, Buñuel all testified on his behalf, but to no avail. On the way home, we stop at Sutton's for some nightcaps. There's Jenny with her group of sad suitors. She's blowing hot and cold. One minute, she's dragging me into the ladies' room, rubbing my cock to her cheek while she pisses. The next moment, she's totally indifferent, couldn't give a shit, smoking a Havana cigar. And then she's a 10-year-old kid, welling up with tears, filled with l'amour. She's blunt. She's frank. It's beyond my control. I'm helpless. Jenny gave me the brush. I went to pieces. So, as a consolation prize, she drove us to a secluded spot off Lake of the Isles, doused the lights. We climbed in the back seat of her mom's Pontiac, dropped our drawers down to our ankles, and made cheap farewell love on the springy vinyl. As if Nurse Jenny could make it all better. It felt tawdry. General Motors emotion. She said, "I'm good and bad, but mostly I'm terrible." She left me in ruins, as she said she would. She was as good as her word. My parents came home from a party while I was having a few friends in. Mom screeches, "What's going on here?" "We're just watching The Thin Man." She unties my polka-dotted scarf and says, "I don't like this. You're drunk." "Of course I'm drunk. Aren't you?" Just then, slutty Pauline stumbles out of my room. Mom says, "And who is this?" Pauline smiles dumbly and says, "I'm Pauline." Mom knits her brows and says, "I bet you are." She looks over at me and says, "What have you given her tonight?" I couldn't remember the name Spanish Fly, so I said, "Just a little Bermuda fly." Then Kramer appears, looking like Phineas G. Whoopi from the Tennessee Tuxedo cartoon. Mom says, in her most sarcastic voice, "Well, look who we have here, my best friend, Stephen Kramer. As far as I'm concerned, you need never come here again." Kramer advances to her, gives her the raspberries, and walks off. At this, much laughter came from the dark recesses of my room. "Get your creepy friends out of here," Mom screams. She's a 53-year-old Washburn girl in the throes of menopause. Bad timing, her menopause and my coming of age. Saw Louis Malle's Murmur of the Heart. Utterly fantastic. A miracle of a movie about three naughty bourgeois French brothers. Love the spinach tennis scene. A little light incest. We laughed for about 10 minutes at the end of the film. September 2nd, 1973. I'm trying to dry out before my fall semester at Parsons begins. I think about booze a lot. It's a big part of my life. I tend to throw myself away. There's a self-destructive thrill in that. We are the mutant children of the hydrogen age. As Popeye is fond of saying, I am what I am. Visited Tommy in the hospital. Legs in traction, plaster casts, bolts sticking out of his bones, pulleys, pain relievers, macabre tableau. He asks, "But we've brought him to drink." "Are you nuts? Your drinking days are over," we say. End of summer heat wave. I was drinking in the afternoon with a pal in an air-conditioned suburban discotheque. He was telling me about the Beretta he'd just bought, just like Bond's. I thought if he ever used it, it would probably be to blow his brains out. It would never be leveled at an agent of Spectre. Another round. It was dark, rather empty, whirling lights, Diana Ross singing. Too attractive, Maud Gar-